This is Matt Wells at UN News. One third of Burundi's population is in need of humanitarian assistance amid ongoing and dire human rights violations there, including summary executions, a senior UN-appointed investigator has said. François Hampson, a member of the UN Commission of Inquiry, has been speaking to UN News after the publication of the panel's latest report into the Great Lakes country.
Arbitrary executions are still happening, but they're taking a different form. Last year in the report, we documented cases where bodies were left in the street, and that meant that they could be identified because they tended to be near where they lived. So not only could they be identified, but you knew the people had died. Whereas this year, there's an increase in people being taken away, particularly at night, and you don't hear anything more about them. There's reason to believe that in very many cases those people have been killed, but they're disposing of the bodies in a different way, so that you don't, first of all, you don't know for certain that they've been killed, and if the bodies are moved a long way from where the person lived, then there's no means of identifying who it was.
Plus, you don't have any access to the country. There's no cooperation with the Commission of Inquiry set up by the Human Rights Council. And with that in mind, and the deteriorating nature of human rights in the country that you say you've found, and with the upcoming elections, what is the likely procession of events in Burundi looking forward?
We're very concerned, given where we are after the referendum now, we're concerned about the run-up to the elections in 2020, because elections are often a cause of a further narrowing of democratic space, even though they ought to be the opposite. And often you find violations, more violations occurring in the run-up to that kind of process, as happened in the case of the referendum. So we're worried about the run-up to the 2020 election. We're worried anyway about the situation, because not only is there a continuation of civil and political rights violations, but there is an economic crisis of immense proportions, that one-third of the population in Burundi is in need of humanitarian assistance.
Some 3 million people, you say?
Yeah, and in a space of 18 months, that deteriorated from 1 million to 3.6 million.
And actually, your report details how people are being taxed at almost every level.
So you can also... I just interrupt you?
Yes.
I mean, some of the financial impositions are taxes as it would be understood by most people. That is to say, there is a law that says you have to pay this money. Others elements are extortion. Someone comes to you and says you pay or else. I'm not sure that one should call those taxes.
Sure, right, okay. levies, if you like.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting
it. But also you say that there's a growing concern about the role of the Imbonerakure, who are everywhere in the country. You say that even where there isn't a local official representing the government, there is Imbonerakure.
The Imbonerakure are the youth wing of the party in power. And part of the Imbonerakure, we're not saying it's all of them, are involved in a lot of acts which, in our view, are attributable to the state, and they're therefore human rights violations. And one feature about the Imbonerakure is, in the report last year, we found that mainly they worked alongside the police and the National Intelligence Service, the SNR. This year, we found that they have been given more freedom of manoeuvre, and they've been working quite a bit in connection with the referendum with local administrative authorities. And the advantage for the state, if one can put it in those terms, of using the Imbonerakure is they're everywhere. So, for example, if you're worried about the possibility of dissent in a small village, there might well not be a member of the police there, but there will be Imbonerakure. And so, basically, the population, the entire population, is living in fear because they don't know who they can trust.
Let's talk about the population. You say that it's quite incredible that given the amount of hate speech which goes right to the top of the government, that the people are not turning to violence, and because they're being told it's an ethnic conflict, and really it's not. It's a political crisis.
It's clear, and our report makes it clear, that it's essentially a political crisis in Burundi, with occasionally ethnic elements, you know, ethnic taunts, for example, if someone's being ill-treated. But it's essentially political. And I think it's a real tribute to the population of Burundi that the ordinary population has not allowed themselves to be whipped up by this hate speech, that they carry on recognising that the crisis is political and they haven't just turned on a scapegoat. Given the scale of the political and economic crisis, it might even be understandable if they looked for a scapegoat, but they've not accepted the scapegoat they've been given.
Final question. You found you believe you found those responsible. You've compiled a list of top generals of, well, we don't know who's on that list, but you compiled a list of alleged perpetrators of these human rights violations, which are incredibly grave. What's going to happen to this list? What will happen to, indeed, the Commission of Inquiry, which you represent?
At present, the list stays with the Commission of Inquiry. If the Commission of Inquiry gets a renewal of its mandate, then we will carry on controlling the list. If, on the other hand, or when the work of the Commission of Inquiry ends, the list will be passed to the Office of the High Commissioner, and it's the legal adviser of the High Commissioner who will determine whether tribunals, for example, criminal courts that want to bring proceedings and might want access to that information, whether they can have access to it. But at present, we're in charge of the issue of access.